to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, hitting firewalled hoe. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ leave you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source code, ISOs, RANs, SIPs, SIPs. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Awesome! This radio show is awesome!
What the hell?
I don't know how to open the show anymore. I'm getting...
Welcome to San Dimas!
Rock on, we are Wild Stallions! Dude, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel for funny openings.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
But you know what, I'm going to leave that in because I'm too lazy to start over. And in case you guys haven't recognized, maybe you remember today's co-host from being on the show so many times in the past, but it's none other than Not Theory himself.
Yeah, what's poppin'?
And you are listening to episode 57 of Binary Revolution Radio. Joining Not Theory today will be myself, Stank Dog. And today, we're going to talk about databases. Specifically relational databases, but we'll talk about the differences between some different types of databases and some go into a little bit of detail about some relational databases. But before we do, let's take care of a little housekeeping. First thing, I am happy to announce we have an update on the status of the magazines. I have them in my hands. Well, not in my hands right now, but they're over in a box on the other side of the room. I have all three issues printed, very nice quality, look very good. I have them in large quantities, so shouldn't be running out anytime soon. So all orders will have been shipped by the time you hear this. So give it a couple weeks, give it a week or two, week and a half. Usually takes about 10 days to get there, up to 10 days to get there. So they'll probably be shipped out, probably be postmarked Tuesday, actually. And everybody who's put in orders and been waiting, thank you for being patient. You should have them very soon, and if not, we'll figure out what happened. But I'm pretty sure I have a list of everybody who's still waiting on orders, so it should not be any problems like that. And that also means that Issue 2.1 is available, and I will put that link up to order that on the website very soon. And I also put up a little 3-pack where people who are new to BinRev and don't have any of the issues can buy all three of them at the same time. So we'll have all that up on the website hopefully Tuesday, but if not, it will be up by the end of the week for sure, no doubt about it. Okay, possibly a little bit of doubt about it, but I'm going to try my best.
Everyone's been waiting for this damn thing forever, and it makes me sick, actually. And I don't think I want to do the show anymore.
Are you so insulted that you're going to hang up now? Because you could do the show naked.
Who says I'm not?
Oh, God. Oh, man. We got owned last week, and when I say we, I mean me. We had an email from El Taco Frio. We mentioned a link to a... someone who allegedly turned a Mini Cooper into a little transformer, not a little, a red transformer robot thing. And Pixelfiend emailed and pointed out that that was a hoax, unfortunately. Cool looking pictures, and I didn't look into it too much, but apparently it was done by some advertising agency for the Mini Cooper people or whatever, so that kind of sucks. But it was still kind of a cool looking robot, so still a cool link to share with the listeners, even though we are noobs. And once again, when I say we, I mean Not Theory.
Oh, I call myself the Stifu.
Stifu. Pajir.
Oh, my God. Okay, that needs to stop right now.
Oh, you went there. I just followed. Oh, and speaking of Pixel Fiend, let's see. Let me play our email theme music here real quickly. I got to start putting that in the show more often.
BenRev.com.
And we're going to go to our first email, and that again is from Pixel Fiend. After showing us how I got owned by falling for a hoax without doing my homework, something that I hate other people doing, but I did myself, I admit it, shut up. Pixel Fiend says, one thing that I wanted to mention is your subject from episode 53, I think, the ethical hacker. Maybe I misunderstood, but I have a different understanding of what an, quote, ethical hacker, unquote, is supposed to be. I thought that an ethical hacker was basically equivalent to a penetration tester, my idea of a dream job. That'd be the life, to be paid for finding security holes and exploring a company's network, assessing strengths and weaknesses without worry of retribution. Unfortunately, the term ethical hacker plays to the derogatory, insinuating that hackers are inherently unethical. So yeah, the term is distasteful. The certification follows this mindset, and whether or not the classwork or tests have merit, businesses see the sexy title. Ethical hacker has more pizzazz than penetration tester, and plays to the current hacker hype. Of course, the cash that they charge for the courses and tests is outrageous. You hit that right on the head. I don't think, however, that the idea behind the cert is to have a bunch of business owners take a class to tighten their network security and earn the right to call themselves ethical hackers, whether that has happened or not. I know a couple of people from the security focus forums and lists who have the cert, and they're quite knowledgeable penetration testers. Although I do have a feeling that their hat changes from white to a muddy gray or darker every once in a while. Did they sell out? I don't know. But I expect that they have a lot more fun at work than me and are making boatloads of cash. A belated congrats on the one-year anniversary. Your show is helping to balance out a lot of the negative politics that are around now, and from what I see, it's contagious, judging from the several spin-off shows that have come about in the past few months. Well, thank you for recognizing the anniversary. We've done a year, and we're well into year two, so that's cool. As far as the ethical hacker, now, I think he made a very good point that the term ethical hacker insinuates that hackers are inherently unethical. And I actually did, I had not thought of that. I thought that was a good point. Did that strike you as
It didn't strike me. But it does make a very good point. But on the other hand, if it didn't strike me and it didn't strike you, who else is looking at it like that? I mean, some people sure, like Crystal Fiend are, but hopefully not the bulk of people. Hopefully the bulk of people are dumb like me and never thought of it. But seriously, because...
I really hadn't, but I worry that he may have a true point that, like, does that how the general populace thinks?
Yeah, it could be. I guess somebody maybe with no contact to the scene might make that connection very quickly.
Hmm.
Whereas it wouldn't even cross my mind. Like.
Yeah, I mean, hackers equals bad guys. Is that not the common perception?
Yeah. So I think he makes a very, very good point.
Hmm. Well, I guess it's perfect timing to pimp Binary Revolution Magazine issue 2.1 because I wrote an introduction for 2.1 that kind of clarifies at least my personal views on the different types of hackers and what's ethical and what's not ethical and how they're labeled. But I do not believe that, you know, I think you said, let me see your exact wording earlier there. You thought that an ethical hacker was basically equivalent to a penetration tester. Now, a penetration tester can very well be an ethical hacker. That could be a subset of ethical hackers, but I'm not a penetration tester. You know, it's not my job. I'm not a certified ethical hacker. I don't do penetration testing for a living. But I still like to think of myself as ethical. So I don't think they're mutually exclusive terms. You certainly can be an ethical hacker, I guess, or certainly can be a penetration tester and be an ethical hacker. That's one type, but aren't there others out there? Can you be, you know, another type? Can you just be an ethical hacker in general?
I guess. Isn't that the distinction of white hat, black hat, gray hat?
Well, and again, those are up for debate, too, and I mentioned that in my article, in my introduction to the magazine, is, you know, one person's definition of those is different than another.
Oh, yeah.
I can't stand the common, you know, I see it on a lot of websites where they say that white hat hackers are computer security professionals. I think that's bullshit. Oh, there's going to be a lot of cussing coming up soon, so I might as well just warn everybody up front.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a load. To be a white hat hacker, you have to be a computer security professional. That's what a white hat, that's what they try to define white hat hackers as, and I think that's just ludicrous.
I think that that's just a generalization that they make so that people understand, like, what white hat means. Like, somebody who's a computer security professional, they do a certain set of things, and they do it, like, you know, for a good cause, and I think it's easier to explain that than just to say computer security professional, have people have that idea pop in their head, then explain white hat hacker all the way out. So I just think it's a generalization.
Yeah, that's probably true for the layman or layperson, be politically correct, the layperson. But bottom line is, I think you can be an ethical hacker without being a computer security professional. If anything, I've met and know several computer security professionals who do the most evil things you've ever imagined. So, if anything, they're the opposite of white hat. They have no ethics. Selling out mailing lists of the users to make money and violating privacy of their users and stuff like that. What ethics are they following? What makes them white hat? What ethics are they following? They're certainly not the hacker ethic. And I think that's another point here that needs to be made is, when you say ethical, you got to define which ethics you're talking about, because hackers do have a code of ethics. The hacker ethic has been well known for quite some time, and it has several conflicts with ethics of the general populace, I guess, the best way to describe it. So just because I might not meet with the ethics of one particular town or city or even country doesn't mean I don't have my own set of ethics.
Right.
I just don't agree with yours.
Well, then you must be wrong.
Well, yeah, I frequently am. So, and as far as the certification itself, I mean, what we said on the show, to kind of recap or summarize, on, if I don't know if it was 53 or not, but it sounds all right, I guess, somewhere around there. We were talking about a company that is giving out, excuse me, they have a training series where at the end of it you get a certification that you are a certified ethical hacker. And I think my, you know, when I summarized the whole thing, I said basically, people educating themselves and learning how to do this is great. I just question the validity of the certification itself. Who is the person who's going to justify, or who is it to judge what is certified and ethical? And hacking, for that matter, all three words.
Right.
You know, they have different qualifications for ethical, like I just said. Everybody has different qualifications for ethics. So that was my big question. But just to throw out a little bit of a teaser, and that's all this is a teaser, is I am going to be doing some very, very detailed research on this in the near future. And you can read into that what you will. So, again, thanks for shouts for the anniversary, and we're going to try to make year two better. We're how many episodes into year two now? This is 57, so we're 5 into year two, so I think, I don't know about you, but I think it's probably time for a rant, don't you?
Yeah, man, go for it.
Is it time for me to really just break down and start cussing? Because that's what's going to happen. Because I got an email from Psycho Mind Lent, sends me an email. And he says, "Hey, Stank Dog, thought you should know about this if you didn't already. Check out the following links for more info on the Induce Act." And he sends several links, and the one that I'm going to read on the air, just go to SaveTheTHE.org. That's the cleanest and most straightforward explanation, and you will find links from that to other sites that go into more detail and more specifics on it. The EFF has a great case up there, and I think you liked the EFF's, you thought that was a good demonstration of the danger of this?
Well, yeah, kind of. I can see, when I originally went to SaveThe.org, they made a lot of assertions that say, oh, this act will do this, this act will do that. But the EFF did a good job of, like, going through, taking the wording directly from the act and explaining how they could apply it to a complaint against Apple, and specifically the iPod. And I thought that the EFF did an awesome job of explaining how this could be abused in the legal system.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of a smart move, honestly, using the iPod as an example, because it gets those millions of iPod users on the cause and brings it to the public attention, and it's not just a little, you know, oh, it's just a few hackers complaining about another privacy act like we've done about the Patriot Act. Luckily, when we get more people involved and people outside of the hacking community and the, well, the privacy community, people are starting to respect and understand privacy more, so the more publicity they get and the more people they get involved, the better it is to stop stuff like this.
Well, I don't know, man. I saw the Save the iPod thing, and I knew right away, whatever it was, I was against it, because I personally hate the iPod, and I hate Apple, so hopefully this complaint with Apple will go through if this act gets passed, and Apple will just be out of business.
Well, maybe we can come up with another way to topple Apple. See, I don't have a problem with Apple. I agree with you. I know what your problem, I know what your beef with Apple is, and I agree with it 100%. But I like the hardware. I don't like the fact that it's closed,
yeah.
Which is your beef. Or, well, why don't you explain what you don't like about Apple? This is your rant. You can have your rant on Apple.
My rant, and I don't need to really make it that long. I'm pretty sure I did this rant once before, maybe if not on this show, on another.
Well, it hurts to do it. It never hurts to do it again.
Exactly. I look at Apple as the Microsoft of the hardware industry. Like, Microsoft has the software industry locked down. Apple has their own little niche market where people will pay pretty much whatever Apple says for their hardware. Now, I know, people have benchmarks, and they say, oh, my G5 runs DNetC like 10 times faster than your machine does.
And it does.
Great. I don't deny that at all. That's great. Running DNetC fast is really cool. But on the other hand, does it do what I want it to do? Like, work that's useful to me, does it do it that much faster and that much faster to warrant that price increase? Probably not, would be my guess. Like, does it, my real beef with them would be, does it run Postgres faster? Because if it doesn't, I really don't care. You know, does it run Apache that much faster? If it doesn't, I don't care. Running DNetC is, you know, it does something good for somebody else. It helps distributed.net, but I'm basically buying a processor so I can do somebody else's work. That doesn't do it for me. So somebody can show me real stats on that.
Well, you're using one example of DNet just because we have that project going on, and we've seen that the Apples do great on that. But, I mean, it's a known, you know, it's a commonly accepted fact that Macintosh is the primary machine used in most graphics shops.
Yeah, well, here we go.
It excels at that.
I don't do any graphics, though, so.
Well, for you personally, right, but.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
If it ran Postgres faster, and this is, I think, the second, this is what I agree with more about your point, is let's say it did run Postgres faster. Does it still justify the cost hike?
If it ran Postgres 10 times faster, like it runs DNetC 10 times faster, and it costs 3 times as much, it's worth every penny. If and only if, let's be very strict here, if and only if I can repair the machine cost-effectively, I can upgrade it cost-effectively, and like, operating system-wise, it's easy to maintain. Now, I know OS X is based on BSD. I used to be a BSD nut. I was a BSD zealot. And then I switched to Linux, and I haven't used BSD. Not that BSD is bad. I just don't use it anymore. From what I've seen, like, Linux is easier for me to manage. Can I run Linux on it? It's a big question for me. If I can't, that's a huge slam to the thing for me. I don't want to learn BSD just to get this thing up and running. So.
Well, I can't speak. It seems like I've seen some of the Mac guys talking about, is it Yellow Dog Linux is the Mac Linux for,
yeah,
the Mac hardware?
Yeah, I've heard of Linux variants that work on it, but everybody I know, they always say, oh, just run OS X, just run OS X.
Right.
And that makes me feel like maybe their Linux project really isn't all that well supported, and that's not something I want to deal with. But again, if it really did run Postgres 10 times faster and I just needed a database server and I had to deal with BSD for like a business project, you know what? Shit, I'd go for it. I have no problem with that.
But again, you said, the point being, the sticking point of, if you could repair it easily, cheaply, buy parts for it, etc. And the fact is, you can't. You have to buy them from Apple.
Yeah, and you have to pay. You could slap any hard drive in there and stuff like that. That's cool. But
some,
RAM, I don't know what type of RAM it takes, and maybe it does take regular RAM. I'm not gonna say that it doesn't, but I don't know. The whole thing just scares me. Like Apple they used to let people make clones, and then they stopped.
Yeah, that's the thing that got me. If they started letting Dell and other companies, maybe not Dell, but they started letting other companies make the hardware as well, so there's some price competition.
Yeah.
I think that would be cool.
Yeah, but the argument that people give me about that is they say, oh, well, you know, having this one supplier makes the platform that much more stable. And everyone always tells me Macs are so stable, but I have a friend who went to art school, and he told me the Macs would crash all the time, every day, multiple times a day. You know, he said it was much worse than Windows. He would do his work on a Mac at school because he had to, and then when he went home, he would do it on Windows because he couldn't deal with the Mac crashing all the time.
Well, that's a specific case, and that could be poor management of the systems or whatever.
Could be, but...
Well, okay. I don't know, but yes, I think your point's well-founded. I agree with you on the hardware issue, but I still also admit that they make good...
Yeah, they
products.
Make neat stuff, and people say the iPod's great, but you know what? The iPod is way more expensive than every other MP3 player out there. So.
But you get iTunes.
Yeah, iTunes for Windows, I've heard, is a real disaster.
Really?
Changed? Yeah.
Hmm.
I heard for macOS it's great, but I heard for Windows it installs all kinds of weird crap, and it's just a mess. Maybe it's been fixed since then.
Please tell me it doesn't install Gator.
No, I'm sure. Well, I can't say I'm sure, but I would hope Apple's not that stupid.
I don't know.
iPod's just overpriced. That's what I think. And I think it's just like the rest of their hardware. It's overpriced, but they've got this cult following, so they can get whatever they want. People say, oh, it's designed so nicely. You know what? I need an MP3 player to play music, and that's it. I don't really care how it looks.
Well, I can do that with my phone.
There you go.
I don't need an iPod to play MP3s.
There you go.
And it's not a cult following. What are there, 3 million or something units sold or something like that? That's a lot.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, compared to the rest of the market, though, I think it's a cult following.
Oh, well.
How much market share does Apple have?
I have no idea. I mean, I couldn't even tell you another competing MP3 player. Rio? Do they still make the Rio?
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about just Apple in general.
No. I'm talking about just the iPod, just the portable MP3 player market.
Yeah, there's the Arcos. The Arcos makes a whole bunch of MP3 players and video players and stuff like that. There's another company that I can't remember the name of. I think it's Neo something. They have an MP3 player that has open source firmware. So people have added like OGG support and stuff to it. I think that is the coolest thing ever.
Hmm.
And it's significantly cheaper than the iPod, from what I remember. So.
Well, you know what? I'm going to look into that just for the simple fact of putting those links up in the show notes when the time comes so people can compare them and see.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Damn, Apple ate up a whole bunch of time. See, that's the other thing I hate about Apple. We always get on rants about Apple, and they waste all our time on the show, and then we never get to talk about cool stuff.
Oh, we're going to talk about cool stuff.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, and we got plenty of time. We got plenty of time to talk about cool stuff, and we don't get into rants about Apple all the time.
Yeah.
There's some things I don't like about, like I said, but I think I like Apple's hardware. I think they make good hardware. I just wish they weren't the only ones that made it. That's all. That's my only beef with them. Oh, but anyway, this email, again, we did get off that, and this is very important, and that is the Induce Act that it's called. Now, the reason we got on the Apple tangents, because I hope they do bring those Apple fanatics over to help fight the cause. That's more people to help stop this stupid Induce Act.
And I got to say, about Apple people, they are fanatical about Apple. When hear about this, and when this gets big, they're going to have a lot of support.
Yeah.
If nothing else, Apple's built tons of support for, you know, their hardware, software, and their company in general. So.
Yeah, I think I can count on two definite emails from two specific people that I have in mind, and they know who they are, that are going to correct us on some of the stuff we said. I can guarantee it. Probably more than that, actually. But anyway, this was, and again, this email from Psycho Mind Lent, thought you should know about the Induce Act. I'm beyond words on how fucking ignorant this is. By the way, keep up the great work on the show. It's highly informative. I've learned a lot from listening to it. Okay, thank you for that. But the Induce Act, let's talk about this for a minute, because this really pisses me off real, real, real bad. So
go for it.
Yeah. If you have a heart condition or are pregnant or nursing a child, you probably want to step away from the radio. See, the problem with it, again, you know what? I'm also going to clarify something else here. If we get right down to it, the fact and the truth of the matter is, and yes, people can debate this, but my opinion on this is, it's well-founded. They want to stop out-and-out piracy. Or at least so they claim. Now, I don't think that's true, but I'm not in any way condoning or insinuating that, you know, mass pirating and selling, you know, bootleg and all that kind of stuff, that's absolutely morally wrong in my eyes. Now, I'm not talking about personal downloads and stuff like that. My feelings on that I've made clear. I bought a lot of albums and gone to a lot of movies and stuff after checking them out first, try before you buy thing. But out-and-out piracy is absolutely wrong. And if the intent on this, which in a perfect world would be passing this act to try to give them protection from out-and-out hardcore piracy. Like when I was at Hope in New York, I don't know how many people I saw on the street selling me bootlegs DVDs of movies that were in the theater.
Yeah.
You know? So they're out there. And that kind of stuff, even though I might have bought one, I don't condone. Actually, I did not. I honestly didn't. But I was tempted. That is what this is trying to protect. And I agree with the heart of what they're trying to do with this. But they're trying to make it so overly liberal and so broad that it's going to restrict everything. And of course, that is what the MPAA and the RIAA and all the other AAs, AAA, every other fucking AAA out there is trying to do with this. They want to stop all sharing. They've been trying it. And that's what just really pisses me off about this whole thing, is they won't fucking give up. Guess what? It's over. It was over when Napster blew up. You had already lost this fight. You will never come back and win. It's the 12th round. You're coming out the corner swinging, trying. I give you credit for that. But you've already lost. You're down on the judge's scorecard. You haven't won a single fucking round of this match. Fucking sickens me that they're still trying to fight. They don't want to lose control. And that's what the Induce Act, that's the problem. It reminds me of the Patriot Act. It's so restrictive that it doesn't want to allow people to do what things that they should be able to do with their... They should have the freedom to use fair use. And they're trying to get rid of fair use like they've always been trying to get rid of it. They're absolutely locking this down, and it's because they think with all that money they have, they go in and they pay off the lobbyists. They send their lobbyists in there to pay off our elected officials, which should disgust us all. And on one of these sites, I think it showed how much money goes to a lot of these people. And it's bipartisan. It goes across the board. So it's not a Democrat or Republican thing. They're all taking money under the table. So the problem with this is trying to fight everything through legislation does nothing but stifle creativity and stifle innovation in this country. And I don't understand. To me, I'm a logical guy. I mean, stop me. Correct me if any point in here I say something that is illogical or something that I'm just off about. Okay, you stop me anytime and tell me.
I'll do that.
Okay. Here's the thing. It was like what? We'll say the 80s, somewhere around the 70s, 80s. I don't know when VCRs first came out. And they tried this shit back then. They didn't want to lose control. The same way they're trying not to lose control now. Again, it's lost. It's over. They already lost this battle. They're still fighting. But again, they didn't want to lose control. But look what happened! This is factual information, you fuckers! God, I can't understand this. Because, thankfully, they lost those cases and the VCR was allowed to be created and people were allowed to copy and record movies. What came out of that? A multi-billion-dollar fucking industry came out of that. The United States prospered. Electronics manufacturers prospered. The movie industry prospered, as much as they don't want to admit it. VCR movies started selling through the roof. They made multi-billions of dollars on selling VCR movies. You know what we didn't have before the VCR? Blockbuster. We didn't have video rental stores of any kind. Now you have multi-bazillion-dollar industries. You have a Blockbuster, a Fortune 100 company? Fortune 500, I don't know what they are, this multi-billion dollar company, based on this, based on innovation, technology, creativity, all these things that sprung up around it. These are facts! This is what happens when you progress with ideas and move into the future.
I agree completely.
It happened again with DVDs. DVD players took off. You can buy DVD movies, and it's a multi-billion dollar industry. They're selling the hardware. They're selling the media. They're selling DVD burners. They're selling DVD ROM drives. They're selling everything, multi-bazillions of dollars. What, please, please, dear God in heaven, tell me what am I missing? Tell me why they would not want, why, I think there's steam coming out of my ears. I can't understand this for the life of me. What in the hell are they thinking about?
I'm not really sure, and maybe, hopefully this doesn't hit you at too random of a point, but I know that in Canada, at least, there's like a tax, on like CD recorders and like CDR media and all this stuff like that, so that the recording industry is not a tax, it's some type of tariff. I don't know, they have a term for it, so that it's not tax.
A levy.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's a levy. We talked about it on the show before. Gluco from Canada notified us about that. I remember that.
Right, okay. And then, you know, the recording industry up there gets money off every CD recordable disc that's sold in Canada. Maybe they're, you know, I thought for a little while that they had that in the U.S. already, but if they don't have it, maybe that's something that they're looking for. They want a piece of any piece of technology that's allowed to record or...
Well,
you know,
see, no, I disagree. I don't think they want a piece. I think they want it all. They want it all. What they want, the reason they're fighting this, is all those things I just mentioned, a multi-billion dollar Fortune 100 company of Blockbuster, they don't think Blockbuster should have that. They want that multi-billion dollar. They don't want to give that control and let somebody else make money. They want it all for themselves to pad their pockets.
Well, shit, if that's the case, then they can start another chain of these fucking rental places and knock Blockbuster out. What's the problem with that?
But they don't have the ability to do it. They'd rather sue. They would rather go through the legislation process. They would rather sue everybody to try to maintain that control back instead of innovating. And that's my whole problem. It stops innovation. And you know what? It's going to end up, and this is why right now there's a phenomenon going on of outsourcing to offshore places. This country, the United States of America, is losing business. We're losing jobs. And don't turn it into a bunch of political bullshit. The bottom line is it's these kind of companies and these frivolous lawsuits and these stupid laws that we pass. Again, bipartisan, it's not a particular everybody fucking getting paid under the table that's ruining this country. And then we outsource jobs and we have people manufacturing all of our hardware in Hong Kong and China and Mexico and South America. Well, that's great for them, and I'm all for the global economy. But understand why it's become this. Don't bitch and say, oh, so-and-so outsourced my job. Well, guess what? You let stuff like this happen as a voting citizen, you stay uneducated and you don't realize that this stuff goes on, I'm sorry, I don't feel real sorry for you. Educate yourself and watch this shit go on and fight it so that it doesn't happen. Let this country innovate. Let this country progress. Let this country move forward, not backward. Don't tie everything up in the legal system.
I agree. Yeah, the legal system is definitely overused for profit in these huge companies, but, you know.
Our legal system...
They control the legal system, so yeah. What are you going to do?
Well, and that's a damn shame. The legal system has stunted the growth of this country. And that's an absolute factual statement. You can quote that. Our legal system, the United States legal system, the judicial system, has stunted the growth of the United States of America. With the government's help.
Well, you know what's amazing to me, though? Like you said, on that webpage, they have lists of people that take money from the... from the recording industry and all this, and Hollywood and all this other kind of crap.
Right.
Like, obviously people know that this money is going into these people's pockets. And I don't want to start anti-Democrat or anti-Republican, whatever. The only person's name that I remember on that list is Hillary Clinton, because she was at the very, very top, and she had like $1.16 million from them.
Mm.
A lot of fucking money. How does this happen? And, you know, what makes it legal?
I can't for the life of me figure that out. I mean, if that's not a conflict of interest, I don't know what is.
Yeah,
just the whole concept of lobbying and giving money to these people is a complete conflict of interest, and it's not something that should be allowed in government.
Yeah. But somehow the law is written. Either the law is written in such a way where they're allowed to do it, or they just never get prosecuted for any of this crap.
Yeah, I wish that we weren't allowed to have any kind of multiple terms. I think there should be no incumbents. Because the longer they stay in there, the longer time they have to get corrupt.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Anyway, here's Stank Dog's ideal world. Here's how it should happen. Here's what should happen out of this whole thing. What should happen is the RAAA needs to shut the fuck up. Stop suing everybody. Put your hands on your desk, count to 10, and say, we lost. We are not ever going to be able to sue everybody and catch up with the pace and the growth of the internet and technology in general. Just put your hands down and say, you know what? We give up. We lost. Let's figure out a nice, fair, balanced way to make this work. Let's come up with something that's fair to all parties. But they're not willing to do that for reasons I said earlier. They want full control. They're not going to compromise anything at all. They knew about this a long time ago. Again, it was Napster. And then everything that came after Napster, of course, the floodgates were open then. You could stop Napster, fine. You can try to stop Napster. You never stopped peer-to-peer because every one you sue, there's another one popping up, and then encrypted ones, and, you know, it's just, you're not going to stop it. It's too late. It's too late. So, while they were busy suing the hell out of everybody, as much as we just bashed Apple a little bit ago, somebody came up and realized that iTunes is a fair way. Some would debate that, but at least it's a compromise of some sort. There's been several things like iTunes, several other places where you can download music and pay per song or pay a reasonable price for it.
Right.
Or pay a monthly price and download a few at a time. Now, if you want to debate those individually, that's fine. I know a lot of people don't think that you should pay anything. You know, that's some person's opinion, whatever. I'm saying at least these are compromises and options that you have. Where the RIAA and the MPAA, they don't want you to have options. They want full control and they want to tell you how you're going to use it, their movies and their intellectual property. Okay? At least these are options. So debating any one of those, that's fine. But they've proven, their proof of concept, that they do work. Obviously, iTunes, you know, jumped up in the first week and made millions of dollars, millions of downloads or whatever, immediately. People wanted it. People were willing to pay it. 99 cents a song. You buy the one song off the album instead of paying $20 for for an album that only has one good song on it. People thought that was a good compromise, a lot of them. To me, personally, I still think that's a little high. I'd rather see, like, 50 cents a song or something, but hey.
Well,
again, that's a personal opinion.
So far, so they must be doing something right, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It hasn't hit my personal level yet, but a lot of people's it has, and that's fan-freaking-tastic. Another thing that's happened is, I talked about this in the show fairly recently, and that is I ordered a CD from a group online, Deltron 3030, something like that.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And I could order that directly from them, which, I'm glad I brought this up, actually. This is a negative. I haven't gotten that CD yet, and it's been like a month or more. But I did have the option of buying it directly from them. You know, they can burn and make their own CDs and cut out the RAAA and all the middlemen because, you know, they jack up the prices for distribution and advertising, and they charge these artists because in the past they had full control. The artists had no other options to get CDs burnt and mass-produced. But as hardware was developed and came up, they had alternatives and they had options. And that helped the industry. It helped the artists. It helped the consumers. But the RIAA lost a little bit more control. And like I said, they didn't want to lose business to Blockbuster. They don't want to lose business to other hardware manufacturers, other distributors. But they don't care about what's best for the consumer. They don't care what's best for the economy or the American economy. They want everything. So there are lots of ways to come up with a fair and balanced compromise with consumers. And make sure that people, you know, artists, musicians, whatever, actors, everybody, get paid. You know? And that's just, it's too late. And until they stop suing everybody and recognize that it's too late, this is going to continue, and we have to keep bringing it up and telling people about it. And again, SaveThe.org, and it's the Induce Act. And the other thing that's sleazy about this is they tried to slip this under the radar. They tried to pass this with a verbal vote real quick, slipped it through without any publicity. And that's just underhanded. They knew they were wrong. When you try to sneak something in like that, you know you're wrong. So the EFF is trying to bring attention to this with that lawsuit to Apple, or a demonstration lawsuit. And not only to Apple, they showed that CNET could get sued, and Toshiba, and they made up a bunch of just about everybody because it's so broad. So get this to a vote. Let your Congress people know. And if you go to those sites, you'll find ways that you can fax and you can send emails to these people. And I've done it. I sent mine. And let them know that it needs to be looked deeper into. Do not blindly pass another bill like they did the Patriot Act, you know, unanimously. Don't let it happen again. All right, I need a drink, and I didn't bring a drink in here.
Yeah, I got no drink either. Oh, well, we're stuck.
Man, I'm in, yeah. Well, I tell you what I'm going to do. Well, let's see. Let's move into the show and tell, because I know you've got a lot of show and tell stuff. I'll give a couple quick things, and then I'll turn it over to you, and I'll try to catch my breath and lower my blood pressure. I had 2600 meeting last week, the August 2600 meeting. So I went to that, been writing some new articles, actually submitted a couple articles, 2600. I've been working on some others that you and I have been actually talking about, some fun stuff. I went to my 2600 meeting 2 months in a row now. My cookie girl has not been there. I don't know what's up. I'm starting to get a little bit worried. I go in, I hook up with my cookie girl, I put the Mac down, hook up some free cookies. I haven't been able to get my free cookies in 2 months now. So today, so this past meeting, I should say, last week, I had to go Mac on an old lady, dude, to get my free cookies. Does that make me a sellout?
No, not at all. She could support you, and you could just sit around and hack all day. That's great. Well, then again, she's working at a cookie shop. Maybe she doesn't have that much food.
Yeah, I was going to say, how much could she have? Hey, as long as she keeps me in free cookies.
That's true.
Yeah, I told her I loved her, man. I don't know. I feel kind of wrong. I feel kind of dirty. I took a shower when I came home.
She's dreaming about you right now. She loves me.
I came home and took a shower, and then I ate the other half of my cookie. But anyway. And ZeroDB actually gave a presentation at our meeting on Plan 9, which he's talked about on the show a few times, and he put Plan 9 on his IBM ThinkPad and gave a little hands-on demonstration, which went really well. A lot of people were interested in that, and that was really cool. I tried to film some of it, and then the security guard came over and told me that I wasn't allowed to film inside of the commerce area known as the mall.
Now, wait, can you back this up? Because I've heard many people say this about malls as well. What's the rationale? Is it just that it's their property and they don't want you to film, or is there something more that I'm missing?
I don't know. He didn't give me an explanation. He just said, you're not allowed to film in the mall. I'm like, oh, really? What's that about? You know, he's like, well, it's just a rule. They're not allowed to film inside of the mall area. You can go outside of the mall, but you can't film inside of the building.
Okay.
So I didn't want to stir. I'm like, oh, okay. I just didn't know. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. So, you know, I put it up, and he kept on presenting. But, yeah, I don't know what the rationale behind that is. So, now I know they've also hassled us in the past about plugging in our laptops, which the first time they did it, the guy gave us some crap about using their electricity, and come on, what minuscule amount of electricity are we using? But the other time, one of the other security guards who was actually respectful came by, and his explanation was that the cords were going across between tables, and they didn't want somebody to trip and get sued. So that, I give that a valid reason, so that I'm cool with. So we still plug in all the time now. We just make sure we move the table right above it so that the cord runs under the table and plugs in, and they haven't given us any hassle about that in a while.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, Plan 9 presentation went really well. I thought it was pretty cool, and he had given a similar, well, he didn't give a demonstration at the DEF CON meeting, but he brought it with him and was setting it up at the DEF CON and was kind of showing me some things there. But he went into a little bit more detail at the meeting, the 2600 meeting this time, which was really cool. And we had a couple new members, or at least one new member, and then someone who I'd never seen before. He said he'd come years ago and had returned, so he's new to me as far as I know. So had a couple new people, so it's still growing. There was probably I didn't count again, but I would say around a dozen people, which is pretty cool. So it was a good meeting. I love getting out and talking tech with people, so it went pretty well. And let's see. Oh, the DDP Hack Radio coming along and getting very close to done. So we opened up in the forums for people to send in their show submissions, show ideas. The information that we need is all outlined in the Hacker Radio TV forum at binrev.com, forums.binrev.com. So check that out. Contact us with your ideas. And you and I actually have got a couple ideas. One specifically that I think is going to be enormously successful.
Yeah, well, I think that should stay top secret for a little while. But
yeah.
I think it's going to be
there will be some other surprises when we launch Hack Radio, I think, I hope.
Yeah, I am amped about Hack Radio, by the way. I've been waiting for a while. Not trying to say, like, there's anything wrong with how long it took, but I am just all about this streaming server being set up.
Yeah, it's going to... I am, too. It's really going to be cool because, for a change, I'm going to be able to tune in to a station, to a streaming station, and get hacking content all the time.
Yep.
That's cool.
Now,
and it's going to be one centralized place that people will always know that they can come to. And at least, you know what, it'll be a central, if nothing else, a launching off point to link to everyone's individual sites.
Right.
You know, come to the station and then say, oh, well, I missed the last episode of Uber Lido, so link over to Uber Lido and download the old MP3s. Link over to Default Radio. Link over to BinRev Radio. Link over to whatever, you know, to Droop Show. Link over to everybody and get it. If nothing else, that's a cool feature of it.
Not the Droop Show.
Oh, I'm sorry, not the Droop Show.
The
Infonomicon. The Datanomicon? The Infonomicon, yeah.
Infonomicon, definitely.
Yeah, I actually haven't listened to the last version of that. I guess they called me. I was asleep. But I think they called me, and I wish I could have answered the phone, so I haven't heard the episode yet. But I have to hear what they had to say. I hope, I'll listen to the episode and see what happened there.
Yeah, I haven't listened to that one yet either, but I got to say, preemptively, shouts to Obfuscated Man. That dude is hilarious. At least he's all about my sense of humor, man. Sense of humor.
Well, the one that
he's sarcastic and rough.
Yeah, I absolutely. Oh, you like it rough, do you?
Oh, I love it rough, baby.
He did have me laughing. There was a joke about disease tag. Oh, dude, I was crying when he's saying he's playing disease tag with his girlfriend. I almost pissed on myself.
Yeah.
All right, who am I kidding? I did piss on myself.
Yeah, well, you know, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's it for me. Now, I'm going to take a breath while you talk, because I know you've got some stuff to talk about Bell's Mind, the growth of Bell's Mind that's going on. You've added some new features to that, some new stuff you put on the PBX. And if I'm not mistaken, I think you've been putting a lot of time into practicing the Albatross. Am I correct on that?
Oh, boy. Yeah. I learned about the Albatross from Stank. He demonstrated it to me in Hope.
You were pretty good, by the way.
Yeah, well, you know. I was only third string, but I helped out.
I don't even know what that means, but... Oh, man, you got me crying again. Stop.
Oh, man. So, oh, God. Just don't even bother to look up the Albatross. Terrible. Kids, Stank is trying to pollute your mind. Parents, run away from this show as fast.
No, I'll tell them that I purposely made that very mean joke to Not Theory here because I found that on, Urban Dictionary. UrbanDictionary.com. Actually, it was, you know what it was? It was marked for deletion. So it's probably gone. Nobody will know. Somebody's going to have to do some deep research.
I thought you said that was on your M4M Trucker site that you hang out at. Oh, should I not have mentioned that on the air?
Yeah, I mean, bookmarks are off limits, man. Stuff in the favorites list, that's not for public consumption.
Sorry. Well, we'll edit that out.
All right, go ahead.
Anyway.
Turnabout's fair play.
So, let's get back on track a little bit.
All right, Bell's Mind.
Bell's Mind, yes. That's the website that I run. I almost forgot. I've added a couple new features. They're not all complete yet. People have been asking for ways to search through the site. The search code is getting there. It's not done yet. But it's getting there. But now you can see what numbers like a particular person has submitted. You can just click on their name in the top numbers list, and it'll come up with a huge list of numbers that some of these guys have scanned. Let me tell you, Right now, Bell's Mind has 13,413 numbers in it. We haven't been up that long, and some of these guys, man, they are just banging out stuff like crazy. Celton X, Gray Area, I hope that's the way his name is pronounced, Celton X, Celton X. Him, or her, and Gray Area, which I met in Vegas, Gray Area is awesome, and Test Set, they have submitted well over 1,000 numbers each. Celton X is actually over 2,000 numbers. So
damn!
Those guys are really making my job pretty easy.
They're power washing the numbers.
They are really. They're fucking rinsing out the goddamn phone system. No joke, man. So let me think. A couple things were suggested to me. I think Ref, that's R capital E P H. I think he was the one who suggested that I should start a forum. Now, don't freak out. This forum is not going to be to discuss anything. It's only going to be to discuss freaking and specifically issues with Bell's Mind, submission issues, you know, bug reports, feature requests. We're not trying to replace your forums or any kind of crap like that. I have no interest in all that kind of maintenance.
Yeah, dude. I mean, if you take away my forums, I've got nothing.
No, I just want to give everybody a heads up that when we have forums, they're going to be specifically for the stuff on Bell's Mind and absolutely nothing else.
So DDP Bell's Mind, is that what?
Oh Jesus. DDP forums already have so many users that there's no point in trying to build
another
community
like
that. I'd much rather hang out there and talk about, you know, coding and stuff like that than do it on my own personal site. So aside from forums, I've been looking for forum software, and pretty much in my mind every piece of forum software sucks. Because most of them use MySQL instead of Postgres. And
I thought, actually, I hate to pimp the one that we use, but I thought Envision was... I thought with one of the more recent versions, they offered one for both MySQL and Postgres, but I wouldn't swear to that.
I actually have another objection to Envision. The last version I saw had a pretty serious vulnerability that I came up with. It's very, very simple, but I was going to write an article about it. Maybe I still will.
Well, there was one, actually. We have not upgraded because I know there's a vulnerability in the later version than the one that we have as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, this particular bug that I'm talking about has nothing to do with SQL injection, because that's what I've seen most of the Envision bugs are SQL type stuff.
Right.
You know, nothing to do with like cookies or any of the kind of junk like that. It's kind of like a different class of
cross-site scripting.
No, it's not cross-site scripting either. None of that stuff. It's kind of different. It's hard to explain. You know what? I'll make a promise that for the next issue of BinRev, I will have an article about it.
Woot!
So, what is it, 2.2, I guess? Yeah.
2.2, hopefully by the end of this year.
Okay, cool.
Actually, I gotta say, since you brought it up, I've gotten some pretty good article submissions. We actually have got a good head start on this one for a change, so that's a very good place to be in instead of scrambling at the last minute. So far, we started off good, but that doesn't mean for people to stop sending stuff in. We still need more.
Right. Yep, always can use more.
Yep.
So where was I? Oh, okay, forum software. I'm looking for forum software, but it's hard to get going. I've also been looking for a content management software because there are some things that I had a long time ago that, like I had some, on my old website, entanglement.net, I had some phone sounds and stuff like that I had recorded that I put up so people could listen to them, different types of error messages and stuff like that. I've got a lot more phone sounds. I have a bunch of international stuff that I recorded months and months ago. So I'm going to take all those phone sounds and put them up on the site somewhere, but I want some content management software to make my life easier. I don't want to maintain static web pages anymore. So I've almost settled on that software, and once that's up and running, there's going to be way more than just scanned out numbers on Bell's Mind. There's going to be, you know, some freaking text files. There's going to be freak sounds. There's going to be a lot of cool stuff on there. And now that I have unlimited Western Europe, courtesy of Lingo, which, by the way, Lingo's call quality, I'd say every 10th call is really terrible. But in any case, now that I've got their service up and running, I can make all kinds of international calls and get lots and lots of cool recordings. So look forward to that soon. Let me think. PBX updates.
Well, and also before, I guess we can't mention any specifics, but in general content for Bell's Mind, well, I guess some data pillaging has been going on.
Yeah.
Is that safe to say?
I was just going to mention something.
last couple of days we've been on some missions.
Yeah, we've been looking around. Should I even mention what it is?
No.
Well, you know what, though? It's on the main page. People are going to know.
Well, anyway.
We've been looking around for data on other countries and stuff like that. So
yeah, that's all.
Yeah, Bell's mind is going international, and because like I said, I've got unlimited Western Europe. I want to start scanning numbers in Europe, so I'm looking for information on other countries. Anything you guys got to submit, feel free to send it off to me, and then I'm going to add support so people can add numbers for different countries. And I think that's going to be really cool.
Bell's mind is joining the global interweb.
I like the progress of Bell's mind so far, but the point has been brought to me that, you know, scanning the U.S. is cool, but, you know, freaks aren't just in the U.S. Most notably, Havoc. Havoc is like, you know, he's our man in Poland. Well, not our man in Poland, but he's the guy that everybody knows in Poland. He is all about freaking, and I would love to see, you know, what he's got over there. I'd love to see some scan numbers he's got. So that's the plan for the next large update for Bell's mind.
Very cool.
And the PBX, let me just throw this in here quickly. The PBX, we're adding new shows to the menus. We got to wait till somebody records new menus for us. If somebody wants to record menus, definitely email me, mtheory@bellsmind.net. We would love to have any type of menus people can submit. You know, I'll send you a script, get the menus back. If they're good, I'll throw them up in the box. But yeah, we're looking to add shows to it. I don't want to list the shows that we've got already because I want to make sure that we've got everything set up before they go live. But new shows are coming up, and we would like people to, you know, if you've got a show and you want it to be on our PBX, definitely email me. Let me know what the show is. And the only stipulation I have on it is that the recording is good quality. You're committed to making a show. It doesn't have to be weekly or biweekly or whatever, but you've got to come out with a show every once in a while. You can't come out with two episodes and then stop, because I don't want to have to re-record menus because someone stopped doing their show. And you've also, out of courtesy, just when your show is updated, when there's a new episode, just email me so I can download it and, you know, convert it to the proper format and put it on the PBX. That's it. So if you're willing to do all those things, we can get your show live on the PBX.
Yeah, and actually we may be able to work the whole thing out automated between DDB Hack Radio scheduling and
yes,
get it up on there as well. So we may be able to automate that whole process.
It requires a little bit of scripting, but I'm sure, as the listeners know, I started programming last week, so I may actually be able to pull some of that off.
Maybe, but I don't know. You're a little slow.
Yeah, well, you know. I'm starting out with the Quick Basic, and once I get
Oh, you kill me.
Oh, man. So let me think. Is there anything else? Evan Doorbell Recordings. I got a couple of them up there, but I'm looking to put everything on wideweb.com up on the PBX, because Evan Doorbell, Mark Bernay, Al Bernay, all those guys who do phone recordings. Strom Carlson has good phone recordings on his site. I want to put all that stuff up because those guys do so much work, and I want everybody to be able to take advantage of that. So all that stuff is going up as soon as I have time to, like I said, rebuild the menus and convert the files. It's going to all be there, with their permission, of course.
Yeah, and also we discussed, without going into too much detail again, only because we want to make sure we can get certain things to work or not, we might be able to offer some other features with the PBX to people who have hack radio shows, like perhaps mailboxes, voicemail boxes, recording, things like that, if we can figure out how to do that easily without consuming a whole lot of our time taking away from other projects. Is that
right?
Accurate?
Yeah, there's a lot of things I would like to offer the guys who are doing radio shows, because they're putting in so much time, you know, to help everybody in the scene out. So, yeah, there's stuff coming for you guys. Anybody who I've talked to about their radio show, you got some nice stuff coming to you. As long as my time constraints work out. Oh, and by the way, if anybody's doing a radio show and you guys need a bridge to record on, just call up my PBX and dial up any bridge. Feel free to use it anytime. You know, we've got tons and tons of bandwidth. The machine's idle, you know, pretty much all day because the load from the Astro server is so low. You know, we get a bunch of people on at night, but, you know, if you guys want to use it during the day or during the night, whatever, to record a show on one of the bridges, please, by all means, do it. So, you know, use the PBX. Use my bandwidth, you know? Fear the fairness.
Now, let's use that that idea of working on the on Bell's mind, that is, and kind of transition into what it was going to be our main topic. Let me check our time here. We've got about 20 minutes, so we've still got some good time to talk about this stuff. And transition just to talk about databases in general, and then specifically, more specifically, relational databases, because this is basically what I do for a living, and something that you use on bellsmind.net regularly. You know, it's an important part of the, I mean, it is the whole thing. It's the back end of the whole system. And I think we're going to both come out, and I think you've already done it, come out and endorse Postgres as, to me, the dominant relational database management system out there right now.
Yeah.
But before we talk about the specifics of the individual ones, let's talk about just databases in general and what constitutes a database. For example, in its simplistic, in its most simplistic form, a database is just a collection of data. It can be as simple as an Excel spreadsheet or a text file with scanned phone numbers or anything like that in it.
Right.
By the textbook definition, a database can simply be an organized collection of an organized gathering of data. And over the years, you know, they've come up with processes and ways to access that data and interface it, whether it be from, you know, a third, fourth generation programming language, accessing that data file, accessing it directly within some sort of database system with SQL of some sort. Most recently, the phenomenon and the trend has been to move to something called relational databases. Now, gosh, this is really something that would lend itself well to charts and drawing and demonstrating stuff in graphs and stuff like that.
But not on the radio.
But yes, unfortunately, I'm going to have to try to do this. We're going to have to try to do this. You have to jump in and help me here. A relational database, what makes it different than just a collection of data is it's more like a collection of tables is the terminology. It's a collection of databases, a collection of files, and each one of these files has been normalized to have very precise data in each individual table. And data normalization is something that's a very, very, very important term in relational databases, and absolutely something in your computer classes. I know, like, this is one of the things they teach you in the beginning, and it sounds real boring, but it's the foundation of relational databases. And I guess to make up an example off the top of my head would be, imagine that you have a website, an online storefront, and you could easily put a bunch of data into one big file that has name, address, credit card number, the items that they ordered, the price of each item, etc. But that's not the most efficient way to store data in a database, especially a relational database. You have duplicate records, you have duplicate items, one person places an order on one day and then comes back a week later and places another one, you've got a whole other record in there with a lot of the same information, which is wasted. So normalizing that data is to sit down and come up with a logical way to break up your data into multiple tables so that it is efficiently stored and you minimize or eliminate, ideally eliminate, duplicate data of any kind. And to do that, you'd collapse, instead of having one table with all that information and all the duplicates and stuff, you break that out into logical separations of different files or different tables. For example, you'd make a table with customers and customer information, and that table would contain name, address, phone number, things like that.
And then a unique ID for each customer.
Right. Well, and they'll have to be tied together at some point. You make a separate table of items and a unique item ID for that item. And you could break it down to as many tables as you want, right down to making, if you really wanted to separate out a table for states. You can make a table with 50 records for all the states and the state codes that can be cross-referenced, because technically two people from one state order something, that's duplicate data. Seems kind of silly, it's only a two-character code or something, but even that can be normalized off to a separate table.
Right.
And most database systems and programs, like at universities and companies and stuff, you will find that you don't have a database. It's a common misconception. You say the database. Well, it's a database, but it's a database that's made up of thousands and thousands of individual tables. And those tables all have to have relationships with each other. And if you can take off with that, with you were just about to say unique identifiers, and those are important because they'll tie the databases together.
Yeah, exactly.
Depending on, you know, obviously it depends on what your database is. But for example, how many different tables do you have with your Bell's Mind database?
That's a good question.
Not precisely, but just kind of ballpark. I mean,
probably about 10, I'd say. Not so many. It's fairly simple right now.
So, like, when somebody submits things, do you keep the submitters? Do you keep the people who submit in a table separately that's cross-referenced from the main collection of numbers? I would imagine in a different table. I don't know. I'm making this up, of course. So please correct me.
Yeah, okay. Basically, there's a table that has each user in it, right? And then there's a table that has the scan numbers in it. And the scan number is like the area code, the prefix, the suffix, the description, the number type, and then it has a link to the users table with the user ID.
A unique user ID.
Yeah, the unique user ID. I don't actually store the username in the table of scan numbers. Instead, I just store like this 2-byte. Or whatever, however large the database makes it, probably 2-byte or 4-byte number that references the user table. So none of that information is duplicated at any point.
Right. So, for example, StankDog could be assigned number 1, and let's say Strom Carlson assigned number 2, and G.I. Joe, whoever else we want to shout out, G.I. Joe assigned number 3. So every time I submit a number, instead of duplicating my name every time, you simply point to that same unique ID of 1, so you know that no matter how many numbers I get, there's only one occurrence of Stank Dog in that table.
Right.
So thereby eliminating, if I submitted 500 numbers, you don't have Stank Dog written 500 times in one table. You have it once in a separate table linked to from the main table.
Right. And that helps you with consistency too, other than like making your database smaller. Like you don't have to worry if somebody submits something and like, if you have them type their name in when they submit it, but they don't type it in two different ways, like Stank Dog or Stank Dog with a space in the middle, you know.
Right.
You can keep everything very consistently.
Yeah, absolutely. Data integrity is maintained by the sheer logical nature of it.
Yeah.
So that is, you know, that's a good example. And again, that's one tiny example of, I mean, imagine how much space is saved, all those bytes, instead of, you know, 9 characters, you use 1.
Right.
So 500, do the math, you see you save a lot of bytes there. And this, again, is a small example. Now, when you're working for a Fortune 500 company and you have thousands of tables and lots of orders, think Amazon. If they didn't have data normalized and running efficiently, just imagine the space that they would be taking up. And they still take up a lot of space, don't get me wrong. I'm sure their database is huge.
Yeah.
But imagine what it wouldn't be if they didn't have normalized data. So that's what a relational database is, where all of the individual tables have relationships with each other through some sort of unique key, and it's called that each table has a key that you use to read it. So by figuring out the logical keys and how you can break this down, you form relationships with all of the tables. For example, I mentioned earlier about making a table with the 50 states on it. This also helps your data integrity because you can present a user, for example, you can write, this is all, we're talking back-end stuff of database design. But on the front end, you can give a user a drop-down list. That drop-down list is powered by your validation table of the 50 states. And when they get a drop-down list, they can't make up a state.
Right.
And I have worked for places that had such garbage data in them that you would just laugh out loud at some of the crap that they put in there. So by having validation tables, which is just kind of a term for a different type of table, you can ensure that only one of those valid 50 states gets input. It will not give them the option to put something else in if you design a nice screen for them. Or even if you yourself as a programmer make a mistake and try to put in, you know, G-O instead of G-A and try to put in a state that doesn't exist, it will even stop you from corrupting your own data.
Right, and an example, I guess, that again relates back to Bell's Mind. If people are familiar with, you know, more familiar with that, I guess, when you enter a number, you enter like an area code and a prefix. When you submit that number, I actually have the NAMPA, which is the North American Numbering Plan Association. I have their database of all the area codes and exchanges in the U.S. that are valid. If you enter one that's not valid, it's not going to let you submit the number.
Excellent example. Perfect example. Perfect
and
example.
And enter, like, 914-111, and then, you know, it'll tell you that that it's invalid. Or actually, it should. You know what? I haven't tested it in a while. It's done a bunch of code updates. Maybe it does let you do it.
Yeah, well, I doubt you undid that. If it was working at, you know, earlier, I'm sure you didn't undo that functionality.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, now I know.
Not intentionally.
After this show airs, there's going to be like 40,000 numbers submitted and invalid.
Oh, well. Now, the next question, and please, if there's something else you think I left out or you want to add, go ahead. But I was going to move into what is database programming. Because people hear the term, and, you know, well, when people hear programming, they immediately think C programming, C++, object-oriented, Visual Basic, something.
Yeah.
When you say database programming, people don't exactly understand what you mean unless they've done it before. Now, the predominant...
It's just funny that you bring that up, because until recently, I didn't really have a concept of what database programming really was. I just, like... I don't know. I kind of, you know what? Well, once we get into details, I'll explain about all that, I guess.
Yeah, and I'm going to try to speed up here because we're running. We got maybe 12 minutes. Yeah, I'll go very. Let me try to go quickly here. Actually, I don't want to rush this though. But basically, the language that most database relational database systems use is SQL, and I hate it when people call it SQL. It's not. It's SQL. Microsoft, when people refer to Microsoft, they use the word SQL. But I don't call all SQL language, all SQL language a SQL. I hate that. But you write programs in some type of SQL language, some type of SQL. Now, SQL is a standard. There's an ANSI standard for SQL that was developed years ago. It's nothing new. But... as technology advanced and as databases became more and more complex and more feature-filled, they found the need arose to do things with the data and analyze the data. With data warehousing as a phenomenon lately and deep data analysis, they found that they needed to start coming up with ways to do something more advanced instead of simple, you know, people who know basic SQL know that the most simple SQL is select whatever, from whatever table name, where, and then whatever criteria. Select all numbers from Bellsmine main table, where area code equals 914.
Right.
So it's that, it can be that simple. But it's not always. Sometimes you need to sort them. Sometimes you want to eliminate 914-111 is not a valid or something. Whatever your example, you can eliminate those if you have a little bit more flexibility.
Right.
Well, most SQL languages now that come with these things are, believe it or not, object-oriented SQL. For example, in Oracle, it's called PL-SQL. In Postgres, it's, what is it called again? Is it just...
It's called PL-PG-SQL.
Yeah. Each different relational database management system has their own. They still have ANSI standards supported in most of them. Actually, Microsoft doesn't support all of them, which I was going to talk about. We might have to save that for another one. But basically, they all have a query language of some kind that's a lot more robust than people think. And maybe if we break down, maybe if we go through some of the lists. Like, there's four big ones in my mind. There are more, but there's four big ones. Oracle, Microsoft SQL Server 2000, MySQL, and Postgres, or PostgresQL,
right,
however that's pronounced. Those are the four biggest ones, the two latter being free, open source, publicly available, and common stuff you see on the web a lot. Oracle being the big boy, that's the big expensive one, and SQL Server is not exactly cheap. And each one of them has their own SQL language to interface with it. So... there are certain common functions that people want to do to their data, like dates. Dates and times is a great example because it's universal across almost any one of these. Date manipulation can be really messy and really tricky when you try to sit there and mess with system date and system time and time stamps and breaks down to fractions of a second. Yeah. Well, what most of these have done is they have functions, date-time functions, that you can manipulate that are pre-written, and you just pass parameters to and from them to get the format that you want. Just like you would do in any other object-oriented language. In C++, you can get a pre-written function that you pass something to it, and it returns you data in that format. Same thing with SQL. These come in two different types, generally. Stored procedures and functions. Now, you would know more about iWood than the web development part of it. Most of mine is all back-end programming. I don't know how often or if at all you use procedures or functions with Bell's Mind or any other stuff you've been developing. Is that
Well, that's what I was going to bring up before. It's funny that you mentioned people aren't really familiar what it means to do database programming. And honestly, what I had been using for the longest time, because I've done a couple of database projects before, some fairly large ones, and I've always just done the selects and inserts and updates and deletes and stuff like that manually. Like, that was just the way I was used to it, because when I started with MySQL, at least as far as I knew, there wasn't any type of language for stored procedures. I mean, I knew I could use SQL, but I didn't really know that SQL had all these extra functions, like you said, to handle dates and to pad numbers, like,
right, the LPAD
zeros and stuff like that. I didn't know all that stuff, and just recently I've been finding that out. So now I've been trying to migrate my code so that I can put more of the code in the database, have the database do more of the work instead of my PHP script. And that itself helps with consistency. Like, the database can do a lot of things to keep your data consistent when inserts are happening at the same time. It can make sure that they happen in a certain order and stuff like that. So as of right now, I don't really use stored procedures or functions very much, but I plan on using them a lot in the future.
Yeah, and some of them can be as simple as, like you said, the LPAD or the RPAD is something you and I were talking about recently.
Yeah.
That's simply a formatting issue. You know, if you want to change a numeric field to a character field or vice versa, or you want to, let's say, right justify a field instead of left justify. You know, you have reason to display it justified to the right for whatever reason. Well, that's not generally easy to do with basic SQL.
Yeah.
You can write SQL code to do it, but it will take a while. It's really messy and tricky, and it's usually customized. Well, you can write a function to do that, but there are pre-written functions that ship, and each one comes with... They're a little bit different, but most of them are fairly consistent. There is an LPAD, RPAD in Oracle. That's where I've used it for in the past. And apparently, we looked this weekend, and there's similar. The parameters are slightly different for Postgres.
Mm-hmm.
But it accomplishes the same thing. And the date functions are very similar as well. I'm finding, I'm now working in a SQL Server 2000 environment, and I'm finding that the date, I don't like the way Microsoft is doing their date functions. They're really... I don't like them at all compared to Oracle. Oracle was so clean and nice, and their date functions were just beautiful. And SQL Server 2000, I am not impressed with their date formatting features. It's just yuck. And I have to use functions within functions to try to clean up the date to the format that I want it. And it's not cool at all. Using convert functions, date functions inside of convert functions, it's not pretty at all. I'm truncating data. It's really tacky, if you ask me, to get the job done.
Yeah.
But these are all pre-written functions, just like, again, I said, you know, reusable code with C. You can download someone else's already pre-written function that'll write-justify something. You can do the same thing as SQL. It usually ships with the database. At the same time, if it doesn't exist within the database, or if there's something that you need to do specifically for your installation or your data, and it's very important that you know and understand that your data and the relationships between your data, understand your primary keys, how to build your foreign keys, stuff like that. It's very important that you know that kind of stuff, and you can write your own functions. And then you can in turn share them with other installations, other people that use similar software. For example, let's say, let's go back to the example with the states. You have a validation table with 50 states on it. Well, I'm writing a separate program over here somewhere, usually called a stored procedure. I'm writing a program or a procedure over here that needs to, A, read a date from, say, a comma-separated value file that someone sends me. and then insert it into our database. Well, before I do that, I want to verify it on this validation table. I can write a function and reuse it over and over again, save it as a name, and simply call that function from within my program. And since it's always the same with our table, the keys don't usually change. Once you set a key in a database, you don't usually start moving stuff around very much. I can write a procedure that automates that, and I simply tell it, go do the date validate or go do the state validation procedure, and then come back if it's successful. And if it's successful, I continue writing my program. So if you write a lot of good procedures, your program can be as simple as a bunch of function calls within basic SQL statements. And most programs in a database environment are stored procedures. They will do all these steps like take a data file that I get, let's say NotTheory sends me a data file, or let's say I send NotTheory a data file, a better example. Let's say I find a text file on my hard drive of a scan of phone numbers that I made a week ago. Comma separated values, I tell him, well, here's the field names, here's the exact data that is in here. He knows his data in his tables. He can write a procedure that will parse through my file. If my dates are in a different format than the dates in his table, he can call the date function with the proper parameters, and it does the conversion work for him. He just has to tell it what format he needs. And he writes that program, and then, bam, execute it, it runs, it parses through, it validates everything, and the result is you just loaded 1,000 numbers or 1,000,000 numbers into your database, clean, verified, data integrity intact, with no duplicates, and absolute clean table that's just as clean at the end as it was at the beginning. And that is the heart of database programming.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wanted to go through some of the specific ones, but I'm going to skip a couple of these. I'll do a mini review on SQL Server 2000 on an upcoming show because I've been learning that and dealing with that recently. So I'm going to save that for another show. I also worked in Oracle. I was in an Oracle shop for a while. And I'm going to skip that one. These are the two commercial options. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes left, and the one thing that I do want to end the show and make sure we emphasize is the open source alternatives that are out there. The free alternatives that are out there, and that is MySQL. Yeah, I corrected myself. The MySQL and PostgreSQL. PostgreSQL. That's how they pronounce it. Now, you and I have been talking lately, and you've been convinced for a while, but I've been becoming more and more convinced as I do research on Postgres that it's really, really every bit as powerful as Oracle and some of the other options. Almost, well, maybe more so, honestly. I think so. Everything that I've been able to do in Oracle, I've seen an equivalent for in Postgres so far. Now, granted, you're developing more in Postgres than I am, unfortunately. I wish I could do more, and maybe I can help out in the site in the future with some of that when I get time. But so far, everything I've looked for, and I've been looking lately because I know that you think very highly of it.
Yeah.
It's got everything that I've seen offered in Oracle so far.
Yeah, I used to be a MySQL nut. I used to love it. But I ran into one database project that I was working on that MySQL literally could not handle it. And if anybody wants to look up the data set, it's a map data set. It's called Tiger, and it's from the USGS, the United States Geological Survey. They have a database called Tiger that has every street in the entire U.S. And you can download it. It's like maybe, I want to say it's like 4 gigabytes of text. Or something, maybe it's about 5 gigabytes B-zipped, or G-zipped. So when you expand it, it's huge. And I wanted to turn that in, I wanted to put that into MySQL and be able to draw maps. Like I could say, okay, draw a map of this region, and it would draw all the streets in that area. Tried doing it in MySQL. MySQL crapped out on it big time. So I started looking around, I found Postgres. I put the data into Postgres. Postgres handled it no problem. Now, Postgres can deal with huge data sets. And when I was done, importing all these tables and creating all the indexes, the database had in just one table, it had multiple tables. The largest table had 147 million records, and the index was 2 gigabytes. So, just one index was 2 gigabytes. So the whole data set was like 36 or 38 gigabytes total. And I ran, I generated maps with it all the time, and Postgres had no problem with it. So that, to me, sold me right there. And ever since, I've just found out more features, and I'm just even more in love with it than I was initially. So.
Yeah, I can't agree more. I think when you've got a database management system that's every bit as powerful as Oracle and free, and I mean, I think we all know Oracle is a gigantic company. It's not a cheap product. It's not a cheap system. And you can get something with near functionality for free. That's fantastic.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. The last company I worked with, they had Oracle do some work for them, and that bill at the end of it ended up being somewhere around $10 million. Yeah.
That's
it was a huge project. Don't get me wrong. Oracle, I don't know that Oracle really ripped them off, because the project was absolutely enormous, but it was still $10 million. That's a lot of money. You couldn't spend that much on a Postgres installation, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, even with considering like putting hundreds of developers on it, you couldn't spend that much money.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is I was a little bit concerned that I'd never used Microsoft SQL Server 2000 before. I'm adapting pretty damn well. Actually, if you can work with one and you understand your fundamentals and the basics and some of the stuff we talked about tonight, I mean, listen back to it again if you have to, but basic database features and concepts, I had no problems adapting. So far, so good. So, and the same thing as I'm looking into Postgres, I'm finding a lot of similarities. So, we're going to have to wrap it up because we are dead out of time.
Oh.
We can spend another show on this, and we will in sometime in the future.
Yeah.
Coming back and looking at some specifics of each one and comparing them. Because there's nothing wrong with Oracle. I'm just saying it's pricey, you know? It's a good product, but it's pricey.
Yeah, I guess in a couple of weeks when we have more time to do this again, I'll have a lot more experience because I'm using Postgres stuff for my business now, and I'm going to have to learn a lot of stored procedures, a lot of functions, all that stuff. I'm going to be doing it 24 hours a day, so
well,
I'll know a lot more in a couple of weeks.
My instant messenger is up all day, so
I'll be yelling at you a whole bunch of questions.
Yeah, by all means, feel free. Now, let's wrap up here. I got a couple quick shouts. Not sure if I mentioned this on the show before, but I just wanted to give one more shout to Rax and the rest. Many of the others, I single out Rax because he's my homeboy. But all the guys that were working on the AV stuff at Hope. At Hope, when I put on my presentation, I walked up there. They had everything ready. They had it all set, easy to go. It took 30 seconds. I was plugged in, ready to give my presentation. And these guys were sitting up behind the cameras the whole time, making sure the sound was right, making sure the video was right. And I, for one, appreciated that because, to me, that was probably really boring. I mean, yeah, I guess they got to see some, watch the presentations and stuff, but that was really cool of them. And I don't know if they got any credit. I really wish they, you know, people appreciated that more. So I just wanted to give a shout-out to them. And, of course, Rax, because he's just, you know, awesome.
Yeah, I will second the shout to Rax. Rax is the man. Let me think. Who do I want to shout out? The guys I met at DEF CON, some people are particularly media shy, so I will not mention their names. but yeah, shouts to them, definitely. They were awesome. I had a great time at DEF CON. Thanks. Shouts to Code Monkey. Next month, I will be at the 2600 meeting unless something really terrible happens.
Awesome.
Yeah, I wanted to go this month, but you know it's a long story, and I don't think Code Monkey went this month anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Awesome is my word of the show. Awesome.
I think. Shout out to everybody who submitted numbers. I mean, not just the top guys, like everybody who submitted numbers. I really appreciate it. Keep the emails coming, you know, give me suggestions. And, that's all I can think of right now. I know there's somebody that I'm missing, but.
I'll also add a shout out to one of the guys down here in Miami, a guy I met recently who's really cool, and that's El Diablo. Shout out to him. I'm going to be working with him on some upcoming projects and some upcoming things, so shouts to him. And email us at radio@binrev.com. Article submissions come to articles@binrev.com. And we're going to close out with another track from MC Chris. And that's going to do it for the show. Once again, thank you, Not Theory, for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having
always,
me.
Always a pleasure. Even though we joke around a lot, that's what's great about having you on the show. You and I think we've got that sense of humor thing where we know how far we can push each other and make each other laugh, so I think that works out really cool.
Speaking of that sense of humor, shouts to Obfuscated again. He's a man.
Yeah, he had me rolling on that. And I guess until we master the albatross, that's going to have to do it for the show. So I think we should tell everybody that we'll see them next week, same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Cuties in the car, walk kitty corner with the itty bitty box. Telescope out the window, asking wise while you walk. I stalk the fox box to the party unlock. Security checks to my eyes, inspected. In the elevator, waiting to get rested. Open the doors, I'm absorbed by the heat. Do you pass a J? Will they play Paul's boutique? Get a plastic cup of ice unless you like it neat. All the girls get up, all the guys take tea. Smoke fills the air. You're feeling the niece. On your major, on your minor, on the Middle East, the fashista. Hop a drink to the sorority sister. Let the belt loop, lead you to the liquor of lick. Smelling better than the bubble gum, scratch your shit. Sip you lick, shoot, suck, and duck out. Eat and cook on my dash to a crib. The roomie is a geek, he's playing God's keys. Making friends, I'm down to win. So I'm climbing up a tree, beers clinging to my teeth. Mr. Window Ledge, hit the hedge, landing from my teeth. Oh, I'm a dog rat, that is the fact check. Living in insects, playing with war wax. Hitting on a hundred at the vending machine. The one hit a trade, dinner, all you need's an ID. I say, I'm a dog rat, that is the fact check. Living in insects, playing with war wax. Hitting on a hundred at the vending machine. The one hit a trade, dinner, all you need's an ID. Oh, pajama, jamma, bottom door, plaid piece, skirts. Every teen girl's wear, make you stare at the dirt. The five balls, I flirt with y'all, study hall, do the geek talk. Till your idol back into your skull, but I'm a freak. Spelled F-O-double-3-K. When you walk on my way, put my pockets in play. I can't say what's your name, care to chat for a bit. It's me, Brian, the guy from the class. Rushing it, care to sit, have a chip, care for some fun dip. Dusty Esky doesn't impress me what you think of that shit. But I don't, I just twitch and I itch in my pants. Play my Game Boy Advance, until she finally walk past. I'm at dash to my crib where I get on my blog. I took the spot.com, check it out if you want. Back to steam, blowing steam, where I reign supreme. Webster's my friend, so I run a message, watch a ween. It's a mess, I'm off a team. It's a paradise on earth, but in a way it's like a curse. Faster than a Google search. Just sit here and drink beer while my roommate flirts at some party with some hottie who's all into Fred Durst. It makes my heart burst. And yet I do nothing. Just get on the web and start bitching and fronting. A .com curmudgeon whose love life is suffering. It's the rope of the oven or the hope of our love. And that I'm a lab rat. That is a setback. Shattering my test tubes, crying in restrooms. Though I'm like broken, you got no place to go. I call my mother.